free energy now.
Imagine a world in which each home has its own power generator that obtains its energy in such a way that no fuel has to be added. Imagine every vehicle being able to run without ever stopping for fuel. Imagine each appliance having its own power source that never has to be recharged. That is the world of the future. Join with us now as we track our progress towards such a world.
Welcome to Free Energy Now. I'm your host, Sterling Allen. You can join us online at freeenergynow.net. You can see our past lineup of speakers, download some past shows, see who's coming down the pike. And if you're listening live, there's some call-in numbers if you want to ask some questions of our guest today, who on June 16, 2008, is Ted Roger Carson. He has taught some courses on a college, some outside-the-box types of material, and he's going to be sharing some of the things he's learned over the years and some ideas he has. Three main topics. Number one, harvesting Asian carp invasion, these fish that are swarming through the U.S. rivers now and getting out of control, harvesting them for food and for oil. Number two, some information on Nikola Tesla. And number three, we'll be talking a little bit about some electric vehicles. So, Ted, thanks for joining us, and we appreciate you coming on the show.
Thank you.
Well, let's first start out with this Asian carp invasion. Let's talk about what the invasion is and then your solution that you propose.
I learned about this a couple of weeks ago, maybe 3 weeks ago, and these fish were imported to the United States to use them for cleaning up scum in some projects they had along the Mississippi River. I don't know if these were water reclamation tanks, or what do they call those, bays. And so anyway, these Asian carp got out into the Mississippi River, and now they're reaching Chicago. In fact, they're at Chicago right now, and the only thing stopping them is a very inexpensive barrier of electricity that was put in by the Army Corps of Engineers. And it's believed there's a Mr. Rasmussen of the Illinois Department of Conservation who feels this is a very frail way to handle this situation, because it's not a very expensive barrier they have, and the voltage, a person could or an animal could go in the water and they wouldn't be electrocuted, they would just get an annoyance. So they think the fish are being turned away now, but they could sneak through because it's not enough voltage to stop them. You know, in other words, when they come to this barrier, they feel this voltage and it's annoyance, so they turn away. And Mr. Rasmussen doesn't think that's going to hold them much longer. If they get through, they'll get into our Great Lakes, and then they can work their way up into Canada. Right now, they're reaching across the central mid-states in America. They've gone out into the, they're like in the Illinois River now, from the Mississippi River, and into the tributaries, and they're into small lakes now from the tributaries. So they're, if you see maps, you can go on the internet and you'll see maps. They're just a whole section of from the Gulf of Mexico on up to Chicago. They're spread out all over the Midwest. There are millions and millions of these fish, perhaps billions. I guess I should mention the size right now. Wouldn't you think that'd be a good idea, Sterling?
Yeah, go ahead.
The fish are average size about 10 or 15 to 20 pounds, and they can get larger than 100 pounds, and they can get in length over 4 feet. So the average fish are about 12 to 16 inches in length and weigh about 15 pounds. And when they had some flood years ago and the Mississippi River overflowed, the fish that washed off to the sides of the river when the river receded, where there were so many fish, it looked like snowflakes or grains of sand on a beach. Just untold millions of them. They never had any idea there were that many. Should we get into the food
source? What's happening to the natural habitat, the other fish, the other species that live in the river as a result of these Asian carp coming in an infestation?
Yes, they're being set back, and their populations are dwindling rapidly, as well as the food chain. One thing about these fish, they do eat at the top of the, they feed on plankton, so they feed at the top of the water. And but the salmon need the plankton and other fish as well, and so they're taking their fish, their food supply away. But they are a clean fish, and they can be eaten, and many people think they taste better than salmon if properly prepared.
And what industries right now are using them for food?
There's only one industry that I know of, and it was Senator Jacobs discovered this problem and brought up to the Illinois Senate, and the state of Illinois only gave $750,000 to this one company to help remove these fish from the Illinois River. They only remove a couple hundred a day. They're sold all across America. They sell quite quickly to a lot of Asian restaurants to use these fish and prepare them properly, and they're supposed to be an in-demand meal. But it's only a couple hundred fish a day, and that's about the only source of income or only company I know of that's harvesting these fish right now. I guess we should mention the bow fishing. There's a hobby going on right now where people rent boats or they have their own boats and they go out and since these fish jump 9 to 12 feet out of the water when the water is disturbed. In other words, when a small motorboat's going through the water or a water ski or something like that, these fish jump out of the water and they'll land in boats and hit people, which hitting the people can be very dangerous. And somehow the fish alert the other fish that there's trouble coming, and so then fish all over the place will start jumping out. And you could have dozens and hundreds of fish jumping all over by your boat, hitting people, jumping across your boat. And
I saw a video of that. Just go to YouTube and type in Asian carp invasion or Asian carp, and there's quite a few videos on the subject. You see these boats going along, and in some cases, I guess they're putting a little bit of electrical charge into the water, and there's just hundreds of fish within 100 feet or so that are just leaping out of the water. It looks crazy, like a fish farm or something.
And yes, and when these fish leap out of the water, and you figure some of them weigh 20, 30 pounds, they hit a human being in the head or something. They've had people with really broken noses and broken bones and arms. And I've never heard of a death yet, but hopefully not yet. I hope there won't be one. Some people wear hard hats and face, like a football helmet, so their face is protected, because some people have had teeth knocked out by these fish. So you can figure a fish jumping 10, 12 feet in the water and that weighs 20 pounds hitting you, it's pretty serious. If people go on YouTube and watch some of these videos, you'll see several times that some of these people that were shooting these fish with a bow and arrow, they have very sophisticated bow and arrows, and they have 2 seconds to shoot a fish when they jump out of the water. And these people become very good marksmen. They do shoot a lot of these fish. Unfortunately, they just throw them back in the water, which I think causes a very serious pollution problem with all these fish dying in the water, because I don't believe, I'm very certain from my studies that these fish will not cannibal each other, so they're going to not do anything with the ones that are dying, so they're just going to rot in the water. So it's not a very good idea, I think, when they throw. But you see quite a few of these videos on YouTube where people, for sportsmanship, they shoot these animals, bring them in, and throw them back in the water when they're done. Or some of them that are in their boat for a while and the fish are dying, they just pick them up and throw them back in the water, and I don't think that's a very good idea either. I think I read on one that some people are harvesting the fish and they get $2 a fish when they bring them to this company that is selling for Asian food. So $2 a fish, it isn't bad, I don't think, considering there's so many. But the techniques they use are not that difficult to catch them since they're at the top of the water. But they are pretty heavy, and it has been causing a lot of nets to get tore up.
So what you're proposing is, with this glut of fish in the U.S. river that's taking over the river, we could actually go in, a company could be established to go in and harvest those to do two things. Number one, it's a food source. Number two, what's not used for food could be used for fuel. or even go directly to a fuel source if it's not needed for food. And with the increasing price of fuels or food around the world, this could actually provide somewhat of a fallback for some of the world hunger, the world food supply that is being dwindling from other problems.
Sure. I would think that these fish being so large could feed a whole family. And I'm not an expert in the food industry, but I'm told that these fish can be dehydrated, and it'd be much easier to ship them, and they could be shipped around the world, use the fish to pay off our, we could give them to poor countries and use it to pay off our balance of trade deficit with China and other countries that are Asian, as well as the poor countries that have oil. We could trade the fish for oil. Our object, though, on this program is to eliminate oil, but for the time being, we're stuck with it, so the fish could help help our balance of trade deficit. Also, there's another thing, that fish could be used for fertilizer besides biofuels. They could use a lot of their bones could be broken up and used as fertilizer. I don't understand the agriculture industry that much, but it sounds like there probably are a lot more uses for them than what we're thinking of. Very, very high source of omega-3, by the way.
Now, when we talk about this food or the fish being used as a food, is this something that could be, what kind of harvesting and, the collection of the fish and the, is this something that would have to be located in region area specific, or would you be able to have one regional location that things could be brought into for processing? How would that work?
I would think, considering it's running the whole length of the Mississippi River and up through the Illinois River, we would probably have manufacturing systems set up every several miles where these fish could be processed, since there's so many of them. And this one company that's doing it now, they take care of the fish the same day on their facilities. They take them apart and take out the meat that they would send to these Asian restaurants. And then the rest of it, I understand, they're using as fertilizer. And I don't know why nobody's thought of biofuel yet. I hope this show gets something started. Because I would think with maybe billions of these, certainly millions and millions of these fish, I should think we could make a lot of biofuel. And that may be really bring the price down on biofuel, make it very easily available.
Well, I know of a technique, the Green Power Inc. out of Washington, they have a 100-ton per day processing, takes input municipal waste and other organic waste, for example, and can turn it into high-grade diesel, kerosene and fuel oil, as well as generate electricity, and that technology could be easily implemented in processing this feedstock. Now, if we talk large scale and we start harvesting these things a lot for fuel, for food, for fertilizer, what are the ramifications to the river systems in terms of the ecological cycles? They're feeding off plankton. How rapidly are the plankton replenished once they're eaten by these fish? And if we started harvesting these fish, are they just going to continue to multiply, or are we going to be bringing their numbers down? Are we going to be depleting some kind of a great resource in the rivers, the top of the food chain, the plankton? What are the ramifications of doing something along these lines?
Right, I think if we had these processing plants every several miles, we could start making some progress on bringing down their population. But right now, there's some people think it's irreversible, that we're going to lose these fish that have been native to that species to the this river system permanently if something isn't done. Also, I think that these fish, if they break through and get into the Great Lakes, we're done. We got a real serious problem. And I don't... This system, I guess, was $1 million or less. that they put in by Chicago to stop these fish, and it's supposed to be, you know, they said a child could swim through it and just be get some irritation from the electric shocks. And, you know, a lot of people feel that's very, very inadequate to stop these fish. But I think, back to your question, if we had a serious effort and we had this broken down into every several miles, I think we could start bringing more of these in and at least save what we have right now and allow it to start coming back. But I think if we just leave it go, these things are just going to keep going. There's one of the things that's in my mind while we're going to talk about Tesla, and I have that picture thinking myself, and what I'm thinking of is one of the videos you'll see on YouTube shows children feeding these fish underneath a crossover bridge. It must be for a highway, or because it looks like a pretty big structural bridge. And these children are throwing little pieces of bread in the water. And these fish are so close together, all you see are their mouths going for the food. And it's just a huge section of this river is filled with these fish. If you threw, let's say, a quarter or something through there, I don't think it would get through these fish and go in the water. I think the fish would stop it. That's how close they are together, and that's how many there are. So if you see something like that, you'll realize just how many are there right now.
Now, in terms of the implementation of this idea, this is not something that you necessarily are inclined to take on yourself and to start a company and to launch this. Your intention here today is actually to put this idea out there for some other entrepreneur to jump on and take the project and turn into a viable company.
Yes, I think we should start up near Chicago, too, because that's the most dangerous section we have right now of the river system. We have to stop them from breaking Chicago. So that should, and that is the area where that company right now that got a $750 million grant from the state of Illinois to, I don't even know if it was that high, but anyway, they did get this grant from the state of Illinois, and they are harvesting the fish right now, and they did improve their operation with the grant, but I don't think it's, we obviously know it's not enough, but they are near the Chicago area, I understand.
Mm-hmm.
But that's where we would want to put several plants and thin down that population immediately, so, and improve that electronic barrier, the electric barrier rather, keep them from getting into the Chicago Great Lakes system.
Yeah. Well, let's jump to the next subject. Nikola Tesla, you've taught some course material on Nikola Tesla. It's been a lifelong studying interest of yours. You've pulled together a lot of material. There are a lot of books and videos about Nikola Tesla from, you know, outside-the-box thinkers. It's not yet a mainstream subject, though it is starting to break in more and more. Give us just some juicy tidbits of things that you've come across in your study that you think might not necessarily have come to the awareness of our audience, which is, of course, much more Nikola Tesla-friendly and, if anything, groupie than those people out there.
All right. One thing, there's a video that's recently, in the last 2 months, has come on YouTube, and you won't find it because the title is in Italian. But if they type in D.I. Tesla on YouTube, it should take them to that. And it's a whole movie, and it's in 10 parts, and it's on, I think it's YouTube, not Google, YouTube. We should, you have your computer handy?
Yeah.
Can you go to YouTube and type D.I. Tesla? Because we should give this out, because it's a movie called The Secrets of Nikola Tesla, and you can buy it from a place called UFO something. You know, you can buy the video, and I think they have it in VHS and DVD. But right now, somebody put the video on YouTube, and it has the, I think it's Italian is the language, captions, but they speak mostly in English, but not all the time. And if you don't have an understanding of Tesla, some of the movie will go past you because they're speaking in this foreign language. And maybe I could give you the, real quickly, to tell you what's going on. There's one scene where it shows Tesla in a college-type lecture room, and he shows he's obviously arguing with a professor, and the professor's putting him down, and all the students are laughing at Tesla. And Tesla took it pretty seriously. In fact, he had a breakdown after that, a couple years later after that. I know myself, if I were put down by teachers, it sticks with you for the rest of your life. I'm a teacher myself, and that's the last thing in the world I would do or recommend that any teacher put the student down. But this put down was about Tesla telling this teacher, this professor at Graz University of, we got to get that title right, right? it's in Graz, Graz, and it's the Polytech Institute. And so Tesla was telling him, why do you need the brushes? You could make this motor with AC and you wouldn't need a commentator. And the guy told him he's crazy, he's a bum, he's never going to mount to anything. He really put Tesla down, he really hurt him. Tesla's father became ill, and Tesla ran out of money and had to leave that school as a result of his father running out of money. And so
the account that I'm reading right now on Nikola Tesla actually said that, you know, he was partying and doing some, you know, playing with women and stuff, and that he was actually kicked out of the school. It was at least a partially a factor, and that he, in his early days, really didn't even do much academically, and he was more of a self-taught. You mentioned that he's got 10 honorary PhDs. Those, of course, came from...
I would strongly disagree with what you're reading, because Tesla is a very ethical person. His mother worked on him all the time. She's a very strong biblical Christian. And Tesla, if you look at his relationships later on in life with Katherine Johnson, he didn't lay a finger on her. They both loved each other. And Tesla and her just, she took longer to come to this, but Tesla said it right off the bat. You're like my mother. You're the kind of woman I would want to marry. If I don't meet anybody like you, I'm not going to get married. So he was a gentleman. I don't believe he was a womanizer. He learned 5 languages before he was in college. So I don't believe he read all the time. His father was always fighting with him to put the books down, and the mother would always come over there and calm him down after his father had upset him. The only reason he was able to go to a Polytech is because he was dying of cholera, and his father was real upset about it, and his father wanted him to be a priest, because his father was an Orthodox priest. And so he said to his father, if I get well, will you let me go to the Institute? And the father gave in and said, yeah. And then Tesla, miraculously, and it really was miraculous, because everybody thought he was finished and he'd never recover, but he did. He recovered. And then his father was stuck having to send him away to the Polytech Institute. So I would disagree with that stuff about him playing around in college. When he got the flash and he got the idea of the AC induction motor, he was walking with a friend of his in a park. And what was he doing? He was reciting Goethe. So
yeah, he had like 10 entire books completely memorized. He seemed to have a photographic memory.
Yeah, so I don't see how somebody can say this guy's a womanizer and he's goofing off in college. I just don't see it. When he was,
it
his mother
could
have
was
been.
Just let me play this out for a second. It could have been that, you know, it wasn't just that his father wanted him to go into the ministry. He demanded it of him. There was no other option for Nikola Tesla. He may have felt boxed in. And it could have been some sowing some wild oats that helped kind of free him from his father's expectations so that he would be free to go other routes.
Well, you are aware that Tesla had a brother named Dane who was older than him, and his brother was killed on a Arabian horse that was given to his father by a Muslim religious person. The father was the only person that could drive this horse. It was a real wild, crazy horse, and somehow Dane got a hold of the horse, and he was driving, and the horse split them, and Dane died when Tesla was 5 years old. Well, what the story is that Tesla was like the underdog of the family. The family didn't think he was very bright. Dane was their hero, their star. When Dane died, Tesla said, I'm going to take over from him. I'm going to show my family that I can be real smart like my brother was. His brother was also supposed to have this gift of the visions besides Tesla. And then when Tesla was walking along a little stream they had there, this is when he got the idea for the turbine, the Tesla turbine. He saw a log floating in the water, and it was rolling, and it had bark on it. And the water was caught against some rocks or something on the side of the stream, but it was spinning with the flow of the water. later on, Tesla walked past there again, and he saw that the log was still there, and it was spinning, but it had no bark on it. And that's where Tesla got the idea from for the Tesla turbine, the Tesla bladeless turbine. And that's when he was a child, probably less than 10 years old when that happened. So inventing, I think, was always there with Tesla. He got the flashes. He seems fascinated with lightning.
Let's talk about the flashes for a second, because this is something that I don't know is commonly known. Let's describe what you
are saying. That's one of the reasons you got me on today. We're supposed to bring up some of this uncommonly known stuff about Tesla, because I just did discover a lot of this when I was prepping to teach these courses on Tesla. So thank you for that. Because if I was just giving him, there's a lot of Tesla stuff on people on talk shows that talk about Tesla. But I think some of these other things here are very important and they're being overlooked. They're hard to find, this information. Like what was plaguing you before your program.
If you could describe these flashes.
Pardon me?
If you could describe this phenomena of the flashes.
Yes. One real quick thing, though. There was a quote about Tesla talking about the universe having unlimited energy and all we have to do is tap it. And I wanted to find that quote, and I gave it to my superior at one of the colleges I teach at, and I was sure I had an extra copy for myself, and I can't find it, but it would be so apropos for today. But he realized we have an electric-powered universe. He knew that before anybody, not just the ionosphere, but the universe, and this statement of his points it out. Okay, now as far as his... one thing here, by the way, let me give this website so we got to clear this up about his education.
Mm-hmm.
It's called frank.germano.com. And if you go to that site, it's got a listing of all the schools he attended in his honorary doctorate. And it shows him with five undergraduate degrees. Electric engineering at the Australian Polytech Institute, mechanical, mathematics, physics. And it says he spoke five languages. And his doctorates, Yale University, Vienna University, Prague, Columbia University, and on and on it goes. And there's about 12 honorary doctorates he got. So we really should be calling him Dr. Tesla, but that gets kind of complicated a lot of times when we just kind of take it for granted and call him Tesla. But in my classes, I usually refer to him as Dr. Tesla for... respect. Okay, now about it's called picture thinking or visual thinking. And he would get these visions in his head, and when he was younger, they were very painful to him. So he would start to learn how to minimize them and then let them come out slowly, and then he could see things. And he would visualize himself being in different parts of the world and talking to different people in different languages. Maybe that's one of the reasons he learned five languages. And maybe that's one of the things that helped him learn five languages is because he would go on these tours around the world. That's what he did when he was very young. And he would also see things in his mind, but they were kind of painful. And then after he got older, he learned to bring these things out and see them, lay them out as pictures, and then he said that he would turn them into his inventions. But I don't know if people know this story about Niagara Falls. He did that whole project in his mind, in his head. And he had everybody very frightened because they couldn't believe it would, when they flipped the switch, everything was going to work. But he did this whole thing out of his head without any drawings, blueprints. And when they flipped the switch, it worked perfectly and everybody was relieved. And that's,
yeah, well, I understand that when he had these flashes, they weren't just nebulous, hazy type of images. They were very precise images, like a finished unit.
Yes.
And when he drew his blueprints and made his plans, he never altered them. He basically built it exactly as he saw it in his head when it first came to him as a flash.
Correct. I'm looking for a quote right now, and he explains that. I got one here. A lot of people ask about Tesla and his religion, and there's a lot of different opinions going around about that. But listen to this quote. The gift of mental power comes from God, divine being. If we concentrate our minds on the truth, we become in tune with this great power. my mother had taught me to seek all truth in the Bible. So, you know, there's a lot of people that say he was a Buddhist or he was an atheist and things like that. Like a flash of lightning, and in an instant, the truth was revealed. I drew a stick on the sand and diagrams of my motor. A thousand secrets of nature which I might have stumbled upon accidentally, I would have given for that one I had wrestled with from her against all odds and all the peril of my existence. This is the one where he came up with drawing the AC induction motor in the sand with his friend when he was reciting Goethe. And that's when he was still in Europe. And that was in 1882.
And he, I was just reading today that at 31 years age, that's when he had his full set of like 10 patents that became the foundation of the AC power industry, the motor, the transmitter, transformer, the wire, or not the wireless.
Transformer?
There were basically a group of patents that he then presented to what now is IEEE at a conference, where he basically presented a new, he said that AC power would be able to answer a lot of the shortcomings of DC and move us to a better future than what DC could. And that's basically what started the AC-DC war that he had with Edison. He was only 31 years old when he had that group of patents and made that presentation.
Okay, let's see. In 1884, he was 28, and then he had his first induction motor in 1887, so that would make him what? Four more years on 28, 31, right, that's about what you're saying. He had the, I'm looking at a timeline now, and I'm not finding this here. He had the transformers. I think you're talking about are how he could, you know, where he was Edison. Every so many blocks, they needed a new power station because they couldn't raise or lower the voltage on DC. So they had to just put a new power station and generate more power again. Where Tesla's system, we could change the voltage. We could send out a real high voltage and then drop it down. So that's the transformer you're probably talking about, his step-down and step-up AC transformers. They didn't exist without him. And his induction motor is basically a transformer, and the rotating magnetic field is the one transformer reacting with the other. The rotating magnetic field, the rotor, the squirrel cage rotor, as they call it, would be the other part of the transformer. Yes, you're right. That he invented all that by 31 years old.
One of the things I wanted to explore with you in this conversation is, you know, Tesla kind of had two halves of his life as an adult inventor, entrepreneur. The first part was inventing things which have become the bedrock of modern society, AC power, radio, etc., and those were all implemented and have become a crucial part of today's infrastructure. The last half of his life was spent exploring things which have yet to be implemented and were perhaps too far ahead of his day to be implemented then. Maybe we could talk about some of those things which he did in the last part of his life and what they would mean if we were to implement them now.
Good. I think he realized that there were some drawbacks with alternating current. You know, it radiates, and it has to have a power source to generate it. And I think he later on realized that we could get this energy out of nature instead of having to produce it with a mechanical means. And so that's when I think he started realizing that the Earth and the ionosphere were two areas that we could tap for power. And that's what his experiments in Colorado Springs were, was to work in that area. And that's where he invented the higher frequencies, where he was able to use his Tesla coil to produce frequencies in the hundreds and thousands of millions of cycles per second, which didn't exist before and he didn't realize could exist. And I don't know if this is true or not, but in one of the videos, it tells Tesla, it has Tesla arguing with Edison, and Tesla tells Edison, your system is unnatural, my system is natural, it's part of nature. You know, speaking about AC. And, you know, if you go on the Internet and you type a Google about lightning, you're going to see some people tell you lightning is DC and some people say it's AC. And some people say it's 100,000 cycles per second AC, which replicates a Tesla coil. So I haven't been able to get that one figured out yet about lightning. Have you any knowledge of that, Sterling?
I don't.
No. So, however, if it is 100,000 cycles per second and his coil, his Tesla coil, created lightning, you know, they call him the man that invented lightning, and he was able to visualize this and see that lightning has this high frequency, and then he had to figure out, what can I do to make a device that'll create these high frequencies, and then I can make lightning. And I'll bet that's how it worked out. I haven't found that yet in any of the documentation I have that that's the case. But if that is the case, then he saw these high frequencies in lightning, even though they couldn't be measuring anything at the time, knew they were there. And by his Tesla coil, he was able to reproduce them. Also, they say that he invented, that he had ball lightning came out of his Tesla coil. And that's an interesting phenomenon on ball lightning. There's some, there used to be, I think they're gone now, they had some on YouTube, and they showed ball lightning in what they call an anvil, or these clouds that, what do they call them? They have nothing above them. It's called an anvil cloud. You know what I'm talking about? You see those clouds?
The ones that where pilots would see, like, ball lightning coming down the aisle of the plane, or...
Yeah, well, there was a video, I have copies of it, but it was on the Internet, and somebody removed it. It was a picture of this giant cloud complex, and there was nothing above it. And it, you know, they call it anvil light clouds, anvil clouds, because they look like an anvil, kind of. There's another name for them, but I can't think of that right now. But they have lightning going sideways and up and down, and then they'll have these balls of lightning floating around. And this fellow that was filming this was talking while he was filming it, and he said these are UFOs, we're being invaded. And these balls of lightning just floated around, and this thing was huge. It was several miles wide, and these balls of lightning just flow from one side to the other, and they'd go up and down. And that's an interesting phenomenon, and I have pictures of them myself. A lot of times you're taking a picture of a chemtrail, and you look at your picture later on in the computer, and all of a sudden you'll see balls of lightning or other phenomenon up there in the sky that you didn't notice till it was till you took a picture of it and brought it out in a larger size on your computer. And so I guess a lot of people call those UFOs.
Not that other sightings of UFOs are trying, you're trying to discount that as being what people are calling UFOs. But
yeah,
in some cases, they're looking at these.
I don't know if UFOs exist or not. I'm just saying a lot of people could call those UFOs.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's tie this back to the last half of Tesla's life and what he was trying to implement.
Right. I think he saw that there were better ways to get power than with AC, and cleaner, safer. I think even when he, on his Wardenclyffe project, which was a giant magnifying transmitter, and it also was a ground pounder. It pounded energy into the earth, and his idea was to send this energy through the earth and also tap the ionosphere and bounce the signal down again with energy. And I think he wanted to even get away from that. I think he wanted to just get this energy that he knew existed there and use it. It was clean, it was safe, and it was free. And I think that's where he had his very serious disagreement with J.P. Morgan, where J.P. Morgan call off all his funds. I think that's what it was about. Also, you know, they have a satellite now, or it's a technology. I saw it. I have the article on it. I saved it. I don't know if it exists, or they say it can exist, or they're working on it. But they can take this satellite and shoot a laser beam to Earth and bead the signal from the Earth, and they can take energy off the ionosphere and shoot it down this laser beam, and we could have free energy like that. And that's sort of what Tesla was envisioning, and that's what these people are talking about doing. But isn't it interesting, in this article, which could have been from a European source, they never mentioned Tesla, because that's what Tesla talked about doing, was getting the energy in the ionosphere and bringing it to Earth. But you'll see these articles, and they never mention that this is Tesla technology.
Let's tie this into a comment that you made earlier in our conversation today, where you basically, I was asking the question, there's a lot of people who are trying to, they're studying Tesla, they're trying to implement some of these advanced technologies that never saw the light of day in Tesla's time, and you made a comment about financing and as to what would be required to bring them out in our day or at any time.
All right. J.P. Morgan told Tesla when they, their last times when they were negotiating, and he told J.P. Morgan, he said, if you help me and finance me, I can give the world a totally different source of energy. It's clean, it's safe, it'll benefit everybody, and it won't be from dirty fuels or any of that sort of thing. And he said, you, sir, have the power to change the whole course of the world. And, of course, Morgan turned him down and said he's not going to do that. You know, he has to make money. He wouldn't make money with Tesla's ways. And that plagued Tesla for a long time throughout his life, that J.P. Morgan could have been the turning point. And my point was, I know if I had the financing, my knowledge of electric cars, and not only me, I'm sure other people out there, we could make electric cars that could beat the fastest internal combustion engine dragster in the world. And we could make that and have it out in a year if we had the financing. But what I'm saying is Tesla did have some financing. He was financed by Westinghouse, and initially there was another person that picked up on financing. I don't have his name here. I'd have to look at my notes here to get it. There was a person that picked up on Tesla before Westinghouse, and I believe that was the person that financed his induction motor. Could it be? It could be Robert Vail, V-A-I-L. No, maybe not. I don't know. I'd have to dig for that one a little bit. But there was a person before Westinghouse that financed Tesla. You know, you recall the story when Tesla worked for Edison and Edison wouldn't pay him, so Tesla quit, and
right.
Then he went back to digging ditches. Well, then this person that I can't, there's a name Vail here in my notes, but I'm not sure if that was it. There was a person that picked up on Tesla and helped him going. And the first thing Tesla said to this person was, you have to give me a lab, employees, and it has to be me. You don't interfere with my operation, and I'll make what you want. I think he wanted to buy Tesla's patent or something like that, and he wanted a working model.
I thought that was Westinghouse.
No, that Westinghouse came after this fellow. Yeah, I know it sounds like Westinghouse, but Westinghouse came after this fellow, and when you're on the phone like this, you got to get this information so quickly.
Yeah. The point I wanted to get to was one of financing. You made the point that I was asking, you know, who should we be looking to today to, you know, kind of keeping an eye on that's going to be bringing the Tesla technology forward. You know, I dropped a few names like, Tom Bearden, John Bedini, Peter Lindemann, who are some of the people who are chasing this technology. Who's going to be most likely to do it? And you answered it basically saying that while these are great minds, what is really needed is money to do the level of investigation and replication that is required to implement something of this scale. And could you just give us a ballpark idea of what level of funding you think would be required to resurrect and implement the latter stages of Nikola Tesla's technology?
Well, if you look at this hydrogen fuel cell funding, our government gives away billions of dollars to big companies like GM for the hydrogen fuel cell project, which is hydrogen fuel is going to be cells are too expensive. They're not going to work for electric cars. The hydrogen fuel is too hard to store, it's very dangerous, and it costs a lot of money to convert to get the hydrogen. So, but the point I'm trying to make is these companies, big companies, very wealthy companies, universities, still get the billions of dollars in funding. I think it's the Bearden guys and the Bendinis and these other guys are the ones that should get some of this funding. And I'm not just talking about this today. I've been on the phone for years calling. When I heard this Obama guy, our senator from Illinois, was supposed to be the green senator, I started calling him immediately with these things. I said, you got to start funding the little guys because that's where the genius is at. Not some company where they have a policy and somebody's afraid to break ranks with them because they know they're going to get fired, so they have to toe the line to keep their job. You have to get independent people, and independent people are the little guys. Those are the people that have to be financed. I started saying that many years ago, and I'm still saying it right now. And I mean, look, these little guys won't need anywhere near the money that the big guys are getting. And look at how much we could do and how fast we could do it. You know, if we're going to move into electric cars, there isn't much time left. But there's an electric vehicle called the AFS Trinity, which people can see on YouTube. There's about 20, at least 20 videos of this vehicle. It's a Saturn SUV converted into a hybrid vehicle. But he takes one step further. He uses ultracapacitors. The ultracapacitors will actually run this vehicle from 0 to 60 in 6.9 seconds, which is incredibly fast. A standard Saturn SUV does 0 to 60 in 10 or 11 seconds. So this thing, the combination of both the motor and the gas engine, this thing will do 0 to 60 in 6.9 seconds, gets 150 to 200 miles, gallon go 2,000 miles on one tank of gas. This is a technology that they came out with, this company came out with. Actually, the founder, he came out of retirement to produce this vehicle. They had three of them at the Detroit Auto Show. It exists. It's not hot air. There's 20 videos on it. Videos were put up late October in November of 07. The car began production on it or designing it in 07 of July. So they came out with this vehicle in 6 months, and they're using, I understand, cordless battery drills, lithium-ion cordless battery drills that are very common but expensive. And they put this car together in 6 months. And GM's telling us with the Volt, with all their billions of dollars, they've been playing with this Volt for 3 years now, and they're telling us it won't be ready till 2011. So this is an example of how the big companies just take forever to do something, and they waste a tremendous amount of money, and how little guys can do it very quickly.
Yeah, we've got just about 5 minutes, and let's go ahead and shift into the last segment of what we wanted to talk about, some of the electric vehicles. And you had mentioned something about the combining ultracapacitors with the electric vehicle technology, and you know, maybe you can elaborate on that.
Okay, nobody's thought of this that I know of, and I deal with this stuff every day, searching the internet and going to the sites and the electronic magazines and all the rest of it. You make a hybrid vehicle with an air-powered, you take compressed air, you drive a turbine with it, which drives a electric generator. The electric generator charges lithium-ion batteries, and you also have the ultracapacitors to assist the lithium-ion batteries. This car could probably get 300-500 miles on a charge. It would the air alone would probably take it 80 or 90 miles, and then the batteries are good for 110 to 120 miles. You combine the two of them with the regenerative braking with the ultracapacitors. One air charge, which would take probably 5 or 10 minutes at a gas station, because you need the higher powered air to do this. And this vehicle could probably go 300 to 500 miles on a charge. So the capacitors would be assisting and recharging the batteries. So you wouldn't be relying on the air charge solely for these batteries. The batteries would be recharging themselves through regenerative braking and the ultracapacitors.
So
if I had $1 million, I could make you one in 6 months. I spent everything I got on it.
So what would be driving this thing
would be driving the vehicle. Pardon me?
What would be driving the vehicle, making it move, would
be
the compressed
air? The electric motor
air.
Would be the main source driving the vehicle. That would be the main source driving the vehicle, and then the batteries would power the electric motor primarily, but you'd have the assistance of the ultracap, and then you'd have the generator, which is powered by the compressed air turbine, charging the batteries. And it's not like the air turbine would have to be on all the time. It wouldn't. The batteries can go 110 or 120 miles on a charge. That's proven. Tesla Motors, their vehicle will go 220 miles on their lithium-ion power pack. If they had ultra-capacitors with that Tesla vehicle, they could probably get that thing up to 280, 300 miles. With the assistance of the ultracapacitors. If they had the compressed air turbine, they probably could get that Tesla car 300 to 500 miles on an air charge. So we could almost go, you know, across the United States on one of these vehicles if it were light enough and efficient. And it's all they're talking about doing is coming out hybrids with gasoline-assisted motors, engines, rather. And that's just going to keep us dependent on gasoline. They're not talking about biofuel-assisted engines. They're talking about gasoline-assisted engines. That's all the big companies are going to give us. And they're not going to let us plug in until maybe 2011, where we're not going to get a car that can be semi-electric, where you plug it in.
Okay, I'm still trying to wrap my head around the system you're describing here. The motor that drives the car is an electric motor, and then you have a compressed air turbine that is recharging the batteries.
It's spinning a generator, and the generator is recharging the batteries. And you have these compressed air tanks are something like a diver uses. So you have a couple compressed air tanks in the vehicle somewhere in a safe location. You charge these up at a gas station, which doesn't take very long, and then the air, the compressed air that's in these tanks, spins this turbine. The turbine spins a generator, and the generator charges the lithium-ion battery.
Where are you getting your compressed air again?
From any air source. You could buy an air compressor. You'd need a fairly expensive one that ran on 240 volts.
You're filling up the compressed air tanks at a station.
There would be. I understand that the gas stations with the high powered air, like you go in there to fill your tires, the ones that have the high powered air compressors, like an auto shop that uses air to take wheels off of cars and things like that, one of those types of air compressors would charge these tanks in maybe 5 minutes or less, and bring them up to a full charge, so they would have full compressed air.
And then you're using that to recharge the batteries.
But the batteries would be also plug-in. You would plug the car in at night. The batteries would have a full charge. And so you could go 110 miles on that initial charge. If the batteries started getting low, the compressed air would spin the turbine, which would spin the generator, which would recharge the batteries, and then extend the mileage. So the vehicle itself would be capable of about 110 to 120 miles. As I say,
could you use a pneumatic system in your regenerative braking to, rather than go into the electrical regeneration, you could go into pneumatic regeneration in your compressed air system?
Yes. You would still be using the regenerative electrical braking, though. I mean, we would want to use AC motors in this, and that's one of the benefits of an AC motor is regenerative braking. So we would be charging the motor every time we come to a stop or recharging the batteries. Every time we come to a stop or we're going down a hill, the batteries would be recharging from the regenerative braking system the motor has built in. We also have the ultracapacitors. The ultracapacitors would charge up. They would hold a charge. That signal would be fed back to the motor and the batteries. So the batteries would be getting a lot of boost from several sources. And if we just look at the Tesla vehicles, they can go 220 to 240 miles on an overnight charge, or if you use a high voltage, they can charge that thing in about 2.5 hours and go 220 miles. If they had these extra things we're talking about here, they could get that Tesla vehicle up to 300 to 500 miles on a charge. And who knows, maybe because of our talk today, they'll do it. Elon Musk, the person that took over Tesla Motors, certainly has the money. He's a multi-billionaire. And he could do this if he wanted to.
Tell you what, we've come to the end of our segment. What I'd like to invite you to do is to put this into writing. We can help you with that. And come up with a schematic, and we can post a page on our Pez Wiki website so people can kind of play with this, you know, argue with it, whatever, and see if it has any traction. I appreciate you coming on our show today.
Well,
we've been talking with Ted Roger Carson. And where is it you teach college?
My degree is in education, and it's my major is social studies, my minor is science, but it's like that's like flip-flopped over the years to where it's mostly science now. I still teach the social studies courses if they're necessary, and I offer them. But science has been most of my teaching last couple of years.
Do you want to give out an email contact or a phone number where people can get a hold of you?
Well, as I mentioned to you, I type very slowly, so email is a real hassle for me, answering email letters. They can go to this company I have. They can go to that website and get a contact information there if they want. What do you think about giving them that?
Yeah, go ahead.
It's kineticaudio.com, and I'm not trying to
say that a little bit slower and spell it.
Kinetic, K-I-N-E-T-I-C, like kinetic energy, kineticaudio.com, and they can go to that website and get phone numbers and contact information.
Thank you for coming on the show. I appreciate you sharing this information, and maybe you can get some traction with somebody running with it.
Okay, thank you. Maybe the world can. I'm not worried. You know, it's like Tesla. He wasn't worried about money, and I'm not really worried about money. I'm worried more about our future and getting these things out there, and appreciate your help in spreading the word.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Bye.
You've been listening to Free Energy Now, brought to you by PES, Pure Energy Systems. You may access past archives and upcoming show info at freeenergynow.net and join us for our daily news at freeenergynews.com. We invite you to see our directory of energy technologies at peswiki.com. That's peswiki.com. PES, the Pure Energy Systems Information Network.